went through earlier. It's data about data. And I am Patrick Campion, and in case you wanted to write it down, you want to yell at me later on, my email address is up there, patrick@enco.com. It's really easy to remember. I am the Director of Product Development for Enco Systems. Rama is going on almost a year old now. We did win the Pit Kit Award at NAB this year. We just won the Advancement in Radio Technology Award, Best HD Technology Application or Piece of Equipment, something along those lines, from Radio Magazine at the NPR show as well. NAB Radio show. We were at PRPD as well. Let's just talk about a little bit. I'm going to run through the things we're going to go over so you can kind of be prepared for what I'm going to be talking about. And since they let me start early, that means I get to go long. So you get to listen to me for even a longer time now. I've done a couple hours or more on this topic. It is a very expansive topic, and there are exciting new things with data that you could be doing. We'll be talking about the types of data, the sources of data, and data examples. This is data collection. Before you send data out, you have to get it from somewhere. So we'll be talking about where can you get data, what types of data are available currently, what types of data will be available in the near future and in the far future, and talk about some examples of types of data that are sent out to different places, different destinations. Then we'll be talking about distribution. So once you have your data, you send it out. And that's going to be discussed about delivery methods, delivery destinations, and some examples of formatics of that data. So let's jump right in and talk about metadata collection. Now, the thing about data is everybody's got a different preconceived notion of what exactly they can or can't do with data and how they're going to get it in the first place. Now, how many people here have some form of computer-based automation system? Does anyone not have an automation system? All right, so that holds to our market research, which is the market is completely saturated and being in this business is a bad idea. The way that most people generate data is automatically, locally. That means every time I play a song, it's going to spit out via serial, via IP, via UDP datagram packets, a bit of data. And it's going to be, for the most part, song, title, and artist information, along with a little bit about your station, so that I'm riding in the car and on my RDS receiver, I could see a little bit different information from you as opposed to the other six stations in the market that are playing the exact same songs as you that have a slightly different ID. So this is how data is generated locally. For the most part, again, it's coming from a automation system. Now, there are some obscure examples of other ways to generate information locally. Denon made a CD player for a while that was able to tie into the CDDB database and send data out serially for CDs. So you just pop a CD into the CD tray, and based on what track you're playing, it could output data to some form of mechanism. People were looking into that as a way for those who still have their music libraries on CD, especially in the public arena, to get data out there. Unfortunately, that is a end-of-life product, has been discontinued, so you're stuck with what I'm showing you here today as far as how to generate data. Something that not a lot of people talk about, and frankly is of great usage to today's broadcasters, especially for as much as syndicated content rules the world of radio, is things that could be generated remotely. As, again, my esteemed colleague from RCS was talking about, real-time data feeds. Now, if you step away from RSS for a moment, because if there are 85,000 RSS feeds available, if you exclude those that are not from 14-year-old boys in their basement, that number drops down to about 84,998. So you have real-time data feeds, which are coming from professional broadcast sources. Now, let's take a hypothetical here because I'm bound by a form of a non-disclosure agreement. Let's say that the largest sports broadcaster, which may or may not be located in Connecticut in America, has a acronym-type name, starts sending out a subscription service to any station that wants to subscribe to it in the country of sports scores, national scores, local scores, college scores, semi-pro, anything you can imagine, thousands of sports scores, sports stats, breaking sports news available as data. Do you think that that might be something that interests you if you run any kind of sports program at all? If you're running an automated feed from the Green Bay Packers and you're 400 miles away and it's completely automated, you have no board up there, all of a sudden on your RDS, on your internet, on your billboards, on your HD radios, both of the people listening to those in your listening area, they could all be seeing updated scores, they could be seeing play-by-play information, they could be seeing a ton of rich data coming from a remote source. So that's one example there. Think about the Weather Channel with weather forecasts. Instead of just having as, again, instead of just displaying song and title information, interweaved into your now playing information, you could have current time and temperature, breaking weather information, updated information about weather forecasts as they change, all interweaved, try and figure out what exactly I'm trying to say there, but you get the idea. That data can come from remote sources. Stock information, business news information, agricultural information, any kind of news that you can get from a syndicated source somewhere out there in the world, you can display on your station. Now let's take that one step farther and talk about real-time remotely generated data. How many people here run some kind of syndicated program off CD or off of satellite? You run a music show, a talk show, top 40 countdown over the weekend, something on Saturday nights. So probably a heck of a lot of people, especially in public arena with Content Depot, the religious arena with all of the long format programs that you get from the various ministries. Right now, what you're displaying during those times, especially if you're on satellite, is your station ID for the most part. Now, imagine if I'm running one of the Westwood One or Dial Global radio formats, and every time they play a new song, I display that local information. I'm saying the artist and the title from them through a delivery mechanism into my data stream. It's another example of remotely generated data. And then there's also data sets. If I send you a half-hour program, and in that program are 15 bits of data, there's no reason why you shouldn't be able to display 15 bits of data instead of a single half-hour long, now playing Focus on the Family with Dr. James Dobson. You could be displaying, here's who he's interviewing now, here's where you call, here's the website, and that could be changing fluidly as your data is going out there to the world. So again, another way to interject data, grab more listeners, keep them more entertained, keep them more in line with what you want them to do, which is listen for as long as possible, and drive your TSLs and your QMs. So another example, again, of data is embedded data right in the file itself. And then you could take that embedded data and make it available anywhere. Remotely located data sets means that you could put that data source or that bits of data anywhere on the internet. So I don't have to only run this when it's live or run it as a half-hour program. If I locally record a three-hour broadcast and I time-shift it to later in the day, I could tell my automation system, hey, go over here and look for this data set and run that data along with the program when I rebroadcast it. So Rush Limbaugh, instead of displaying, now playing Rush Limbaugh on my station, here's my website, you could be displaying, call this number for Rush Limbaugh, here's who he's interviewing now, here's the book that this author wrote, here's where you can find that book. And then as the show goes on, you could display all kinds of information. So those are examples of automatically generated data. You can also do this locally, manually. I guess the best way to describe that is think about this as instant messenger for the radio. In instant messenger world, you type in a piece of information, you hit send, and it goes out there to the world. Why couldn't you do that with radios? Why can't you get an Amber Alert, have a person sitting in a room type that in, hit enter, and have it displayed on every radio in your listener area that has an RDS decoder in the receiver? There's absolutely no reason why you couldn't. Weather alerts, school closing data, any kind of information you want to put out there could be typed in and sent out. Now, this also applies to, again, if you're locally running high school sports or you're running a local concert or you're doing a live remote from a concert, something like that, you could be typing in data and sending it out there. Every time the band changes songs, you send the data out. Every time you go to commercial break, you send out a score update. It's just typing in a little bit of data, hitting send, and populating it out there. And the same thing applies for manually generated data. On a remote side, If I'm a public radio station taking a symphony concert from NPR, they could have somebody sitting there typing in, this is Beethoven's fifth, this is Bach's ninth, this is the, you know, so-and-so fugue ninth in A minor, blah, blah, blah. So your data feed locally could be changing based on data that you're getting from a remote place. Non-programmatic data, scheduled messages. One of the interesting things about anything that a company like ours comes up with is we have to come up with a reason with the dollar sign for an S. You know, that all popular, what's it going to do for me? How is it going to make me money? The first thing that almost anyone came up with as a way to easily make stations money using data is scheduled messages. Scheduled messages are essentially just pieces of text that wait for a time and a place and send it out. So, for instance, every morning from 6 to 10, I could send out a message every 5 minutes that says, our morning show is sponsored by Bob's Ford. Bob's Ford can be seen on the internet at bobsford.com every 5 minutes. So you go to Bob's Ford and you say, hey, you're the official sponsor of the morning show. So not only are people going to be hearing your ads saying that you're the sponsor of our morning show every day, they can see your information all throughout the day. Bobsford.com, bobsford.com, bobsford.com. So no matter what's playing on the radio, somebody glances over, they're going to see bobsford.com or a radio or a phone number. Real-time data feeds we kind of already talked about from places like big stations or syndicators for sports, for news, for traffic, for information. Some of this is going on already, but there's not really out there a great delivery mechanism for it, and we'll get into that in a second here. Manual data insertions, again, we talked about pretty much anything you come up with, but the best use we've thought of for these are EAS information, Amber Alerts, breaking news, storm alerts. You could stop all of your data flow for an hour while there's an Amber Alert out there. You could type in a piece of information, say, this is very high priority, lock out all other data, and it displays nothing but Amber Alert, 14-year-old, blonde hair, blue eyes, 5-foot-tall girl, license plate in this car, blah, 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 and just circles that data over and over and over again. Even with the limitations of RDS at 8 characters at a time, you could still put significant data out there. Event-triggered data feeds. Let's say you've got Yes coming in concert at the state fairgrounds next week. Tickets available at Ticketmaster. You could set it up so that every time a Yes song plays, instead of showing Roundabout by Yes, it shows Roundabout by Yes, and then all of a sudden it starts scrolling, Yes concert coming up at the state fairgrounds, Ticketmaster.com for details. Yes concert at the state fairgrounds, you know, over and over and over again. So you could have event-triggered data. And then, of course, because this is engineer speak, I'll have to send out null data, which effectively null data is nothing, and it just clears the display. So let's talk about distribution and some of the ways that people are doing this right now. Data relay mechanisms. I think, how many people here have an RDS encoder of some sort? Not a heck of a lot. There are about 8,500 stations in the U.S. right now which do RDS data of some form or another. How many people send now playing data to their websites? Ooh, even less. Man, you guys are an untapped resource here. No wonder the guy from RCS was so excited about you guys. How many people here are broadcasting in HD on their FM? Well, more than are sending now playing data to the internet. So you guys have your technologies all out of whack here. People actually listen on the internet because they have a computer. I just clue you in on the fact that in New York, the big news station in New York, not WCBS, NYX? NYX? INS, okay. WINS, at its peak in the state of New York, in the city of New York, has 1,500 people listening on their HD stream, on their digital stream. 1,500 out of a market of, what, 15 million? 1,500 people, and that's in New York. If you're in a small town in the middle of Wisconsin that has a broadcast listenership of 5,000 people, the 0.1% of that is zero, basically. So HD radio is not a viable technology yet as far as gathering data about people, having people, more people listen to your station, so on and so forth. We have solutions for that, and you can ask me about it in the booth over there. It's kind of a side topic. But that's one of the relay mechanisms. So, and then when we talk about relay mechanisms, we have to talk about data destinations, HTTP data, or what was called PAD data is now called program service data. You send it to your HD importer and it goes out there. Now, the beauty of HD data, it is so much more rich than RDS data. RDS data is that old clunky, it's 8 characters at a time. Some RDS encoders can fake a scrolling piece of data by resending it 1 character at a time, left to right. But again, it's just a fake scrolling data. HD data, one of the things that the people from Ubiquiti did right as they got the sole rights to license to every station in America a bit of proprietary technology, and every person that buys a radio pays them money too. So, it's one of the best monopolies ever created in this business. But that being aside, one of the things they did do right was the data portion, or almost right. They allow for essentially an unlimited number of characters. It's based on an XML format, and an XML format, I think, can support over 6,000 characters per piece of data. And it does true scrolling, and it does uppercase and lowercase, and it does specialized characters, and it does data seen and data unseen. Now, RDS data has, I think it's 31 formatted categories, and a lot of other things that American broadcasters don't use. Our RBDS is essentially the Americanization of the European RDS standard. Now, in Europe, they do really cool things with it, like the station I'm listening to it now, I'm driving to another location. What's the other frequency that this station is being broadcast on? Essentially, what happens is, like in the UK, when you have a large government entity that owns almost all of the commercial broadcast stations in the country, they implement whatever technology they want and they force a standardization into the market. So there's a lot of things like that. Traffic alerts, news alerts. They have a mechanism that if you're listening to a CD in your car, it can alert the radio that it should turn off the CD and turn on a station. I don't know how well that would go over in the U.S. You know, man, that just killed my iPod feed. Dang it, I never listened to this FM radio thing before. What's this all about? It's an interesting implementation, and those are all included in our RDS formatics, but it's not something that almost any station in America uses. Essentially, all we do is type a program and title an artist data, and then all the other things that we talked about. And that goes out on a 57 kilohertz subcarrier along with each station that implements it. HD data, again, is a variety of different messages, but something that a lot of people are talking about is song data tagging, and that's a little out of order here, so I'll get down to there in a minute. But I had to adjust a little bit the presentation because there's some new data that's out there about iTunes and Zune tagging. Website data. One thing I did want to correct Barry on, is he in the room anymore? No, so I can bash on him all I want? Great. Nobody tell him I'm saying this, but he'll hear the recording later. Everything he's presenting to you is new technology, and I hate to say this, we didn't come up with it. It's decades old. 9 years ago, we embarked on a program with Susquehanna Radio called Interactive Radio, which at the time meant sending SMS message alerts to people when their favorite songs were coming on, putting artist and title information on websites along with buy now links, and streaming album information, advertiser information in the form of data and in the form of pictures to a website. All that being said, the folks at BE with TRE, the folks at Arctic Palm, us with our Rama product and our Encore product, those have been around for years and years and years and years and years, and nobody did it. 10 years ago, nobody wanted to hear about that. There was hardly anybody listening on the internet. There was hardly anybody that had the bandwidth to display album info along with music data. There was hardly anybody that could stream anything higher than like an 8K stream. So people weren't wasting their time. But then all of a sudden people discover that you could do ad insertion on the internet, you could drive a listener base, and as more and more people got high-speed internet access at home and at the office, that became a lot more popular. And then all of a sudden, Clear Channel started doing it, and that's 1,500-plus radio stations in this country, so everybody wanted to tag along and follow along with them. I can tell you this, the day that Cumulus took over Susquehanna, they were doing non-traditional revenue to the tune of about $5 million a year just with banner ads on their websites, not including people doing click-throughs, not including people doing upsells to advertisers to include them on the website. $5 million a year to have banner ads essentially on their website that they did nationwide and were associated a lot of it with programmatic data. It cost them $1 million a year to do it, so Cumulus in their infinite wisdom shut it off the day that they took over. They turned it all off on every Susquehanna radio station across the country. So, again, it points at you got to spend money to make money here, but some people don't like 500% returns on their investments, so they step away from it. Music licensing reporting, sound exchange reporting, everybody loves this one. That infinitesimal piece of a penny that they take to distribute to all of those other people that have their hands out in the world today. They require you to send them data in two forms. One is, what are you playing? What time is it? What length is it? What's the ISKI code? What artist is it? What album? What producer? Blah, 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 blah. And then they also have to be sent data of how many people were listening at that exact moment. The only way to get the exact number of people listening out there is through partnership with your streaming provider. We do the rest. We send all that data to the streaming provider, and that goes out along with all of your other data to all of your other sources simultaneously. Billboard data. This is more of a big market thing. I remember the first time I encountered a billboard data system in use was at WRAF in Detroit. They were using it as now playing data. They had these big billboards with this giant, nasty-looking red and black screen at the bottom, which was 8 characters because whoever designed it decided that they were going to fit it in the RDS spec. So it had 8 characters at a time, now playing on WRAF on the sign, and then below it would say, jump, Van Halen, jump, Van Halen, over and over and over again, because I couldn't tell just by listening to my radio that that's what they were playing. But what really caught my eye with that was what the morning show guys were doing at the time, which was having people call in and say, hey, Bob's listening, and then they put up on the sign, Bob is a bleep, and have that rotate over and over again and get a big kick out of the fact that all of his friends are seeing that Bob is whatever he is on the sign. So that really led me to believe that there might be a future in something like that, but not a lot of people do billboards. Clear Channel in Detroit right now is running billboards, those big fancy screens that look kind of like big LED monitors or LCD monitors. They run dynamic content on them, now playing, but instead of being a separate add-on out of the billboard, it's all part of a larger dynamic display. Corporate reconciliation and playout tracking, there's a lot of people that want a signal sent to a corporate traffic and billing system every single time a spot plays on any one of their O&Os across the country. Essentially, this is how they make sure that they're billing properly, making the money they're supposed to. This is also how AdSense for Audio works. AdSense for Audio from Google, any implementers of AFA, anybody using Google's AdSense for Audio? They say like 12,000 stations are using it, or maybe it's 1,200. So just none in Wisconsin, okay. Not that they'd ever exaggerate. They basically require that before a spot plays, you have to send a signal to Google saying, hey, this spot's loaded and it's ready to play. While the spot's playing, you have to send them a signal saying, hey, this spot's playing right now and it's on the air. And then when the spot finishes, you have to send them a signal that says, hey, guess what, that spot just finished and it played for this length and it was the properly scheduled cut, so you should get your cut and you should give the station their 50% and then charge the advertisers for what they just played on that station. So you get a penny, they get a penny, and everybody's that much richer at the end of it. Affiliate data relay mechanisms, reconciliation, a lot of network affiliates are now much more interested in whether you guys are playing their spots or not. So much like the AdSense for Audio mechanism, every time that you play a network spot locally, or every time that you play your required spots as given to you by your network for exchange for running their programs, they want to know about it, and they don't trust you to be signing an affidavit and sending it back to them anymore because a lot of people fudge that. Even in defiance of Sarbanes-Oxley requirements, a lot of people still, purposefully or not, and let's just err on the side of caution and say it's not on purpose, they fudge that. So these affiliates want to know immediately if you're playing their show, if you're playing their spots, network and local, and if you're playing them correctly. So another piece of data that can be sent out is that. And then let's talk about song data tagging. Ah, yes, the ever-popular iTunes tagging. We've all heard the spots brought forth by the HD Alliance talking about how everybody's iTunes tagging these days, and it's so wonderful and it's so great. I'd be willing to fathom a guess, and let's show of hands in here, who has never seen a radio that can do iTunes tagging? Never seen one in their whole lives. Never seen a radio that can do iTunes tagging. How many people in here actually know a person that owns a radio that can do iTunes tagging? that's not an engineer or works in the industry. Sorry, I have to, because I have one in my office, but I had to develop the technology, so, you know, I kind of had to have one. I would have never bought one in the outside usage. I don't even have an iPod. We have one at work. I plug it in, it works. That's all I know. So the brilliant geniuses at Microsoft said, hey, you know, we've got this device out there right now, and a lot of people have it. You know, like 1% of the people that have iPods have a Zune, and it can receive FM signals. It's got an FM receiver built into it right now. How cool is that? And guess what? It can do RDS. So they've announced that with a software update to their latest players, you could do RDS tagging. Instead of having HD tagging going to no one, every person with an RDS receiver in their Zune, which is 6 more than no one, can now receive data and tag the songs. However, it's kind of a sketchy method. They do artist and title matching. One of the proprietary things of iTunes tagging is every song has a unique, what's called song ID. Every time you do an HD data send with a iTunes tag, it contains a station ID, which is you guys, to get credit for the sale, a storefront ID, which in the United States is United States, and a song ID, which is a unique, kind of like a code, an ISCII code, for every single song. I think it's 7.5 million songs, something along those lines, that exists in the iTunes library right now. Last I checked, there were like 47 versions of Hey Jude on iTunes, just by the Beatles. If you don't include cover songs, you just include the Beatles before the breakup. There are 47 versions of Hey Jude, live, not live, album, single, so on and so forth, radio edits. How does the receiver know which one you're playing? And how do you guarantee that the one you just heard on the radio from your classic rock station is exactly the one that you're about to go buy? The only way to do that is to send out a unique song ID. And the folks at Apple have come up with a way to do this with RDS as well. They filed an ODA to expand the RDS spectrum, the guides to what fields can be included in RDS. And starting very, very soon, they'll have one of those nice little plug-on adapters that goes on the bottom of your iPod that'll have an FM receiver and the ability to do RDS song tagging on it. At first, just like HD tagging with stations that are not sending out iTunes tagging data, it'll do the best match it can for artist and title, which if you misspell it or are playing something incorrectly or one of other 472 variants, the person buying the song may get the different thing than what they want. But then once people start sending out this new form of RDS information, which is the song ID field, and they'll have receivers out there capable of receiving it, you'll be able to do iTunes tagging through an RDS receiver, which, as opposed to how many people have an HD radio, how many people have an iPhone or an iPod somewhere? How many people? Raise your hands. I'm making you work. Let's raise both hands, put the left one down, put the right one, you know. No, sorry. A lot more people have iPods than HD radios, let's just say that. And a lot more people have iPhones than have HD radios. A lot more people have 16 cats and 4 dogs in their house than have HD radios. But that's besides the point again. Data tagging beyond iTunes. We're letting Apple and Microsoft drive a technology out there that has kind of existed for a while, but nobody really had interest in that. And that is, hey, I heard a commercial I like. I heard a news story I like. How do I tag that for use later on? 10 years ago, a company during the big tech boom out in San Francisco got this brilliant idea. What if we gave people a little keychain and it has a clicker on it? And while they're sitting in their car listening to the radio, they hear something they like, they click the clicker. And it keeps track of two things, which is an exact time code and a station. You go home, you plug that into your USB port on your computer, and it says, hey, at 12:45 and 15 seconds, you were listening to Bob Smith Nissan's commercial. Here's a link to their site on this from this station, so on and so forth. Since most of you have probably never heard of that technology in this room, let's just say it didn't catch on all that well. Sony is now trying to do the same thing. The next step for Microsoft and Apple and people like them that are already getting people used to this tagging technology is to expand it. Instead of just having songs, why not have tags for commercials? How many people would love it if Every time you tagged a Geico spot, you went onto iTunes, it linked you through to the Geico website. I mean, advertisers would go crazy about that. You wouldn't have to remember phone numbers as much anymore. It would give the listeners, and again, the actual implementation of this technology, whether people would really use it, is a little bit sketchy because everybody knows how much people love to listen to ads and interact with them. But instead of having to call the station and say, what was that phone number for so-and-so, and they were giving away these vitamin pills, they just indicate their interest by pushing a button on their radio or pushing a button on their iPod. And then when they get home to the safety and comfort of their computer in their mother's basement, they turn it on, and it gives them all that information right there. Song interest, topic interest. I mean, you could be talking with a specific author on your news station, and you could be clicking along going, hey, I'm really interested in this guy. Where does his book, you know, I'm driving in the car. I can't write down this guy's author right now and the name of the author right now, but I'm going to look that up later on. And then what we get into for a future interaction or a future application is something that the BBC is looking to do by the year 2010, and that is interactive radio, which is funny because 9 years ago we had a program called Interactive Radio. If you haven't noticed, most of our programs incorporate the EN, so instead of interactive, it was interactive radio. Very creative. Instead of just doing interactive radio on the internet or on cell phones, which again are technologies that have been out there forever and a day, you can do it right on your radio itself. Now, in the U.S., that's probably going to mean that somebody is going to have to be a big WiMAX provider, or you're going to have to develop radios that can talk to cell phones and get on the internet that way. Now, there's really no way to send a signal back to a radio station right now except for the internet. So text messages are just a variant of that, I guess. But to be able to quickly push a button, and some of the ideas that they were coming up with was instantaneous feedback from listeners on songs. You have a little smiley face on your radio. Every time you like the song that you're hearing, you push the smiley face, and it sends back data, and they have smiley faces, and they have frowny faces, and you're giving a thumbs up or a thumbs down to what the station's playing right now to drive music. Again, one of the funny things about RCS, they invented music scheduling 28 years ago. Before that, it was actually done by people who knew about the music as opposed to a computer. But this can give you more of an interactive feel. People that like to have those small group interactive meetings with their listeners, now you could have every one of your listeners telling you whether they like a song or not instantaneously. Topic interest. Again, it's like, should we extend this topic past the bottom of the hour? We're going to be talking with an author, or we could switch to talking about the local sports team, and people could be going, hey, I like that. Here's my smiley face. Keep going with that. Or frowny face. That's stupid. I don't like that anymore. And sending that data back to the radio station. Instant messaging to the host, again, stepping away from text messages. If you had a radio capable or a cell phone capable of knowing what radio station you're listening to, you could just send data and push it through without people having to know your phone number or your text message number or whatever your SMS ID is. You could just send data back and forth right to the radio station. And this goes, again, for requesting more information. Years ago, the movie Starship Troopers, has anybody seen that movie, Starship Troopers? It's a wonderful piece of science fiction. One of my favorite parts of the whole movie, besides the big bugs that splatter and they're green and everything, and Neil Patrick Harris being a kind of a drugged out psychic, which was interesting for Doogie Howser to become that, but was how they watched TV. They watched TV by standing in front of the TV and listening to tidbits. And at the end of every tidbit, it says, would you like to know more? And you push a button, and it tells you more. Why wouldn't this happen for radio, too? You know, this is the latest spot for Bob Smith Ford, and we've got these new Ford Flexes, and we're giving away one to every the 10th person that walks in the door today. And, you know, would you like to know more? Push the smiley face. And you push the smiley face, and on your cell phone is a pre-recorded message telling you more about that. Science fiction in so many ways drives what we're doing here today. Look at cell phones as compared to the Star Trek communicators of old. Even though Picard would kick Kirk's butt any day of the week, I think that it's worthy of note that so many current technologies that we have come from this outside medium. So none of these are really new ideas. It's just practical applications of how we can make more money in today's world using those pieces of technology that were proposed by some sci-fi kid somewhere. Data localization, This is, again, for people that are more affiliates of nationalized programs, specific ads for specific listener types. Once you interact with a radio station, they could know everything about you. For instance, I am a 31-year-old white male from the northwest suburbs of Detroit. I have two kids under the age of 7. I have a house and two cars and a nice big backyard, and everything's peachy and wonderful, and my income level is such, you know, $12,000 a year, and, you know, so on and so forth. Whenever a spot plays on a national end, they could localize the ads using a new type of radio that could store little bits of information about me. They could target me with a specific version of that ad. They could target me with a specific advertiser. If the radio knows who I am, it can play for my interests. Local data, when national spots play, for instance, a national, I keep hitting on Ford, but I'm from Detroit and my family all worked for Ford, so I'm hitting on it. It's just stuck in my head. When a national Ford spot plays, it does the local dealers almost no good because people have to take another step to find out where their local Ford dealerships are. So when a national Ford spot plays, it could be displaying local information about your local Ford dealer. In Detroit, there are 52 Ford dealers within the suburban and metro area of Detroit. It could be displaying where the website is for the local Detroit Ford dealers, with directions to the closest one, things like that. And then you could also do local news, weather, traffic from national providers. And again, this goes towards the interest of not having any people at your local facility. You could be pulling in data from CNN, ESPN, the Weather Channel, Bloomberg, compiling that and pushing it out as data to your local sites while national programs are playing. A sidebar there, just for a moment, is that our product, RAMA, which is the Remotely Administered Metadata Appliance, which is kind of like a DA for metadata. It can take several different inputs and distribute them to up to 10 different destinations. And there's a flow diagram at the end of this presentation that talks a little bit about what that can do. I lost my train of thought completely now. I got so excited about my own product and trying to sell it. It can take all of those data and interweave it with your local data again. So you have the ability to have 20 or 30 or 40 or 100 data feeds that you turn on and off at your whim and interweave them again with your local data feeds. Richer data, video, album art, locally displayed billboard ads. Video and album art are things that have been around forever and ever and ever. Locally displayed billboard ads, you could be displaying local content when a national spot plays. Again, let's go to the Ford dealer example. On your website, you're running a national ad for Ford. A local Ford dealer could buy up that advertising space and display their local Ford banner whenever a national Ford spot plays. There's no reason why that can't be done right now with minimal effort on the station end. Videos. The day might come sometime when radio is a video medium as well, where you can time videos to radio. Our automation system is capable of playing out video and audio at the same time. So if you ever want to play music videos instead of cuts ripped from CDs, you can certainly feel free to start doing that. And then you can send the video wherever you want as the same time as you're playing out your audio. So your web stream could be video and audio overlaid with local advertiser information and all kinds of fun and exciting things. So how do you make money off of all this? It's the big question at the end of the day. A lot of this stuff is cheap to do. A lot of it's very expensive to do, especially in the HD realm. How do you make money off of all these things? Now, the first and easiest one is product ordering. You tag an iTunes song, I get 5 cents for every song that I tag or is tagged by a listener that plays on my station, a whole whopping 5 cents. But it's 5 cents more than you had yesterday and probably 5 cents more than you'll have tomorrow. You could be clicking through on a website to buy anything from Amazon. You establish a storefront ID or a partner ID with Amazon. Any advertiser, any author that's on that's talking about a book, any product that your advertiser is selling, any national spot you're running, it's all for sale on Amazon. Essentially, you can buy anything on Amazon, and if you are a Amazon partner, you could be getting credit for everything, every single thing that people are purchasing through the links on your website on Amazon. Program sponsorship. Instead of just having, again, people mentioned as a program sponsor, why not give them a viewable program sponsorship as well? Show it on your RDS, show it on your HD data, show it on your website. Anything that you can do to drive more people to their business is going to keep them on longer and help happier and healthier and get you more money in the long run. Program underwriting for those that are in the public realm, public broadcasters here today, NPR affiliates. All right. We represent 64% of the public market in automation systems now between us and AudioVault. We're almost at 95% of the public marketplace right now. So we help NPR and PRSS and PRI and all those other program distributors out there with the next generation of technology. And a lot of what we're talking about today, we're doing with them right now. For instance, Gordon's primary competitor in the classical music realm, C24, is within a few weeks of starting to distribute and syndicate their data in such a manner that the affiliates can read it and redisplay it on their local pad and RDS data streams and internet data streams. The same holds true for a number of syndicated partners through the Content Depot program. Things such as that will allow for embedded data in the cart chunk of the file itself that'll be able to be displayed locally. Programs like that can be underwritten in a visual form and a spoken form again. There's no reason why you should be limiting your advertisers just being heard on the radio or rotated through as a billboard ad with the 45 other ads on your website. You can associate every time their audio plays or every time a program plays that they are sponsored by, they get first billing. They get the highest position in the commercial break. They get more than just a 60-second ad or a 30-second ad or a 10-second underwriting announcement. And then charitable donations. I come from a heavy Christian radio background, and I got to tell you that the way that we made money was to make the ministry's money. We promoted their product. They either did pay-for-play or they did split money revenue with the local station, and the more money they made, the happier they were because it supports their nonprofit ministry. If you could give people another way to donate to that ministry through data, then you can make them even happier and keep them on your station for an even longer time. And you can do that by, instead of just, again, clicking on a song to buy a song, you can, every time Focus on the Family plays, put a picture of Dr. Dobson on your website along with a link to their website or a link to sponsor the program or a link to make a donation. A lot of Christian radio stations also make money through sell-a-thons, things like Feed the Poor, which actually builds homes in Jamaica, which I've never quite gotten why they're called Feed the Poor, but things along those lines, you know, what are the children sponsorship programs? I mean, there's hundreds of these ministries that sponsor a whole day of programming, and not a lot of people are doing good interactive content on their website to go along with that. And Christian stations and news talk stations have huge website viewerships because of the inherent nature of the information-rich programming that they provide. You know, it goes back to that concept of, would you like to know more? You go into their website and you find out a heck of a lot more. And then last but not least, this is kind of the workflow mechanism that we've been talking about here today. In the middle of all this, you have the internet. It's a big cloud. There's lots of things populating the internet. And the internet, on the whole, is an inherently unreliable mechanism for delivery of data. Things like multicast streams are impossible to guarantee. Anything that happens via IP basically is impossible to guarantee that that's going to get from point A to point B. Our preferred method for delivering data is UDP datagram packets. Just to give an example of some of the proprietary technology that exists and what we're doing right now, on the right-hand side there you have the head-end automation and the head-end what we call Pad Live, where we talked about the instant messenger for radio. And that sends data to the head-end ROM, which is this little solid-state box that's about 7 inches wide and 2 inches high. Again, your automation or your data DA. And that what lives in that box is a subscriber list, a bunch of IP addresses of other ROM boxes living out there in the internet. So let's say that I am ABC Radio Networks and you're listening to my format for soft AC or my jack format, there might be 300 IP addresses in there, and every time I play a song or do something new, it sends out that data to 300 affiliate RAMAs. And that affiliate RAMA interacts with local data to send out your data to all these different places that we talked about, like RDS, PAD, SoundExchange, the ever-famous etc., web, billboard, all these things inside your place. So you could be doing SoundExchange reporting on what's being played to you over a network by a very simple delivery mechanism. You could be displaying remotely located data from an from a network head end for what is essentially a very, very simple mechanism. And all it requires is a teeny little box or a piece of software running on a machine somewhere in your building, and it's redistributing all that data along with your localized data as well. And like everybody else in this business, the RAMA boxes are automation system agnostic. We can get data from a serial data feed from a DOS system from 15 years ago. It's not really that big a deal. So, questions. That's my summary at the end is the big flow chart. Gordon, if you could be so kind as I'm hoping I'm not overwhelming people too much. How am I doing for time? 5 minutes? Or I'm fine? No questions? I don't think I'm that thorough. Did I put anybody to sleep? Ah, there's a question.
Want a clarification?
Sure.
From what you said a moment ago. This is, did I hear you right when you said that IP feeds are not that reliable for getting from end to end?
That's correct.
I think you need to get a talk to the folks over at Zephyr about their Zephyr IP. We've been running remotes on that thing with absolute reliability for 3 months.
Well, if you're doing point-to-point connectivity between two sites, that's different than what we're describing, which is bouncing through 450 different mechanisms to get from one point to the next. To get from the internet to a local affiliate site is a different kind of communications. Your first transmission to a site might get there, but the acknowledgement might not get back. That's one of the inherent problems with IP is it's a bidirectional communication. UDP datagram packets don't require any acknowledged receipt to come back. But distributing small amounts of data over the internet could be an uptime of 99% or better, but it's that 1% that kills you for this kind of a data mechanism, which is why, again, we went away from the multicast model and went to a unicast UDP model. Does that make sense? I mean, would you ever use a streaming provider to do a remote broadcast? You know, we go out to a site and get on the high-speed internet access at a remote site and tie into a streaming provider and send that stream back to your local station and do the remote that way? I mean, how many times does your audio stream drop out during the day because of some kind of internet connectivity issues or things like that? I mean, it's not a reliable enough mechanism at this point.
At this point.
Right,
this,
yes.
Yeah, give it a couple of years.
Yeah, and that's fine, but, you know, we develop for the future, obviously, but we have to live within the restraints of what's available out there today. I mean, our building in Southfield lives across the street from one of the largest intersections of internet pipes in the country, and we still wouldn't be able to do this reliably enough for it to work, to meet broadcasters' demands, let's say. Anything else?
Okay, thank you.
All right, just so everybody knows, I'm exhibiting. If you have any more questions about this, I'll be happy to answer them. I can answer questions about RAMA or remote data feeds, what networks are going to be making that stuff available, things like that. Just come by and see me in the corner of the room in booth 58.